Questions?
When you first moved in, what special activities did you have to invite the community back into the church?
Yeah, so when we first moved in, there was a lot of, you know, interest in the immediate neighbors, just because it had sat not ever totally empty, but our building had sat near empty for a number of years, and so when we were working on it, there was obviously some interest. So we did a community open house. We did a tour just for the church at one point, and then we did a community open house the week before our first worship service there. And we made a big deal of it, put a sign in the front yard, but we also hand-delivered invitations to the people in the sort of at least block or two around, which was a big win, I think. Not right when we opened, but we basically tried to take whatever opportunity we thought, you know, might be there to make something happen. So our building turned 100 last year. So we also, this wasn't right when we moved in, but we also did, tour the historic building tour. You know, we hired a couple people to be sort of, we didn't hire them, they were volunteers, but we made them sort of like docents, and we, you know, coach them up on some of the history of the building and how things had developed. We had found some history of the building in some different places, and so we're able to do some historic tour. I actually was kind of like poo-pooing this as an idea that anybody would come to it, but like 45, 50 people from the neighborhood came, which was really cool, and did that. And then, again, not a like right when the building opened up thing, but could work when the building opened up. But for us, when COVID, when restrictions were lifted, we're all stir crazy and desiring to sort of get back together again. It happened to coincide in Cincinnati with Pentecost. So we threw a big Pentecost party and put up tents in our parking lot and had ice cream truck. Grater's ice cream is a big thing in Cincinnati. We had Grater's ice cream truck and street pops and, you know, all these kind of, you know, desserty kind of food trucks, and did a little party for the neighborhood that way when restrictions opened up again, as a way of sort of celebrating, bringing people to the building. So I don't know if that answers your question. He already ran 12 miles this morning too, and he's hopping all around.
No, I was going to piggyback on that, Jennifer, because people are going to be curious about what's going on in that building. I mean, they've seen the trucks coming in and out. They've been seeing the cement trucks. They're seeing equipment brought in. They're seeing all that stuff that they're going to be seeing the pews being brought in at some point. You know, all those things that make a building a building. And so I think it's important for all of us to, yeah, really piggyback on the idea of just kind of festering that curiosity in the neighborhood, and what can we do to get these curious people inside the building, you know. And I think your ideas are great. I love every idea you gave, so thank you so much for all that.
Yeah, thanks. Yeah, I mean, one mentality to have is, and not in a triumphalistic way, but just in a way of recognition, you know, churches are an amenity to the neighborhood. Right? And I don't think you have to apologize for recognizing that that's the case, right? That your church going in there is going to be a positive for the neighborhood, not just for us who believe, but just, you know, there actually is a bit, by a way, maybe some of you know this, and I can try to dig it up for you as well, but there was an urban planner at the, I want to say it's the University of Pennsylvania, who tried to quantify what the economic impact is on a neighborhood of churches. And he gives different, weighted values to marriage counseling given, and potentially marriages saved, suicides prevented, you know, things that are very hard to quantify all the time, but services, you know, free meals that are given out, parties that are thrown, children's activities that are, and tries to quantify, like you do for any other organization, on net impact on a neighborhood, and he comes up with a formula for how to do that. We have that information somewhere. I can send it to you. We had it all prepared for the time when we had the enemy at the city council meetings. We didn't end up having to use the information, but thinking about that. But even for your own internal confidence and hope and desire for the neighborhood, just recognizing y'all choosing to be there and God choosing to put you there is a gift to the community in a lot of different ways. And thinking about how you can make a big deal of that, I think is, get those giant scissors for Brian and you guys can do the ribbon cutting and all that, so.
During your talk, you talked about how you guys did walks and prayers. Did you start that before you moved in? So that was, and I know right now we have in our app like that there, we highlight different communities and like businesses that are there that we can go and frequent and things. But when did you guys start the prayer walks in the process, I guess is my question.
We did it probably from right when we started as a church, when we were 12 people in that launch team, right at the beginning, well before we knew where we were going to be located. We did sort of have an idea of what our five little neighborhoods would be, and we just set different. Some of it was, frankly, we didn't know what else to do. You know, we didn't have a lot to do in our early days as a church. We didn't have a lot of regular things happening. So we knew we were supposed to pray. We didn't know exactly how to do that. We didn't have a building to meet in to do our prayer meetings, so we just went out and walked around and did it. So yeah, we created a culture of doing that. We've had to shift on it now that it's bigger, and how do you do that? So now we've encouraged it more, you know, through small groups and things like that. But it's been a fun and neat, you know, way to do it. Yeah.
Can you describe a little bit about the difference in before you were in the building and then afterwards, and how the church either grew or what different kinds of people came? I mean, our situation's similar, but going to be very different just because of our context. But I'm just curious kind of how that played out.
Yeah, I think positively, we did grow almost immediately afterwards. And I think some of that was there were people who would visit when we were, you know, y'all are meeting in a nice, beautiful space even before you move into your new beautiful space. We were in a cafetorium, you know, in a an elementary school, and it was not aesthetically pleasing. In fact, actually, you know, one of the things that one of the other pastors at our church would say when we moved into our new building, they said my sermons got 20% more interesting just because of the aesthetics of, you know, everybody daydreams some during that. It was just more holy daydreaming that would happen in a beautiful space. But what, you know, what we had was, I think there were people who, when we were a church plant and when we were young and when we were, you know, pulling everything in and moving everything out every week, there was some sense of like, let's see if these guys are really for real. You know, and some of that was people just not wanting to commit to a church that might not be here in 3 or 4 years. Some of it was folks not knowing how committed to the place were we. You know, there were folks who are really interested in the neighborhood who would say, I'd love for this, but I just don't know. Are they going to move somewhere else, you know, in 5 years or 10 years or whatever? And so as soon as we got into the building, it communicated a sense of like, well, maybe we knew a little bit what we were doing, you know, but it was that, and maybe we can throw in with these guys because, you know, they're not going to close the doors and, you know, maybe, so inspired some confidence. But then the other part is, it was a way to plant a flag and say, we're here and we want to be here for this neighborhood. And there were people who got interested that way. So there was some growth. That was the positive thing. I will say there was a negative aspect that I think we're still combating 8 years in. And that was when we were in the school and when we were moving, setting up chairs every week, and when we were, you know, mobile, and our midweek meetings were all over the place at different places. There was a general sense that we were on mission, that everybody needed to pitch in. There was an urgency created that was pretty easy to get lackadaisical about. As soon as we got into the building, there was, even though we talked about it, there was this general thing of, all right, well, we've made it, or they probably don't need help, you know, doing X, Y, or Z. They're probably covered. It looks like it's functioning fine. They look like they're doing okay. And we still are battling that, I think, you know, 8 years after having moved into our space. So, yeah, I think that's a challenge to be aware of. So how do you talk about that? How do you stay on mission? How do you still, you know, keep the mentality of we're still a church plant in some ways? You know, a church plant feels like on mission in a different way sometimes than, hey, we're established. I don't know. Yeah, I think thinking about ways to talk about that.
To add to that, Josh, I know you guys met at 5 p.m. for a while, and I know you were back in the mornings prior to being in the building.
Yeah.
But that will be a significant change for us as well, having never met in the morning. What were some of the changes that y'all experienced with that shift?
Yeah. I think maybe it's the same for you. In our context, everybody that we polled in our neighborhood loved the idea, theoretically, of a Sunday evening worship service. And yet, it was when the Bengals would play at 4 o'clock, attendance would drop in half. In the summer, there were so many conflicts with picnics and parties and people with their friends and families. And it's just Sunday morning, even in a fairly secular neighborhood in the Midwest, it was still the cultural expectation where you had the least amount of conflicts. And so that was a big win to get to Sunday mornings. I was the lone holdout in our church. I loved Sunday nights. I loved never going to bed on a Saturday night freaking out about Sunday morning. But everybody else wanted to get to Sunday mornings, and they were right. It was better for everybody, I think, other than me. It was better for everybody to get to Sunday mornings. But I think the biggest change honestly was for the folks who had to get there early, whether it was our band or people practicing a little earlier in the day, just needing to load up everything a few hours earlier. Load up by, I mean, just getting ready to go, you know, a little bit earlier in the day. I think that's probably the biggest change. I know parents loved it better for kids. The witching hour, you know, wasn't a factor anymore. Probably also the folks working in kids' ministry liked it better for that reason. Man, and you guys are going to have, I saw the building yesterday, all those kids' rooms with all that bright, with the glass and bright sunshine. And those are going to be such happy spaces, I think, for kids on Sunday mornings. It's going to be really exciting for y'all. Yeah?
What was your closest church when you moved to your building?
Question was, what was the closest church?
Thank you, Dwight.
You're welcome.
You mean other churches in the neighborhood? There is a church just on the other corner of us that actually changed hands since we've moved there. So it was sold from one to another. Actually, we tried to, and then they didn't do so well. We're in the middle of an expansion now as well. So we just went through a capital campaign like you all did to add on to our building. We had bought 3 adjacent properties and are about to break ground hopefully next month on adding on a ministry center and more kids rooms and things. Coming out of COVID, the church that bought this other church, they had a pastoral transition, things were not going well. And so we were trying to figure out every way we could not have to build a $4 million building, you know, extension. And so we asked this other church if they would consider selling to us. They politely refused. Our elders said, well, let's just ask one more time. And so they sent our executive pastor over like a lamb to the slaughter to ask again. And they said, no, and don't ever ask again. It's kind of what they said afterward. So we've tried to develop a good relationship with that church. Since we've come, though, this has actually been an exciting development for our neighborhood. So in the last 8 years, there are 3 new gospel-centered churches, broadly gospel-centered, I would say, who have a lot of overlap, who've come into different parts of our neighborhood. And so it's been exciting. I meet with those pastors on a regular basis. That's been really fun. So there's been sort of a changing of the guard. Some of those old churches that weren't doing well, usually mainline churches that had either had a population flight, you know, that they were no longer connected to the neighborhood, but then also theologically had some theological shifts that were not helpful to their mission in the neighborhood. There's been a change, and that's been a really positive development as a whole. So we've seen some new partnerships form, which has been really great. Were you going to ask one?
I had a question about feasting, so kind of more what you talked about last night. So just thinking about like where our church building is going to be, and the idea of feasting, like when you say that and what we think of, I think is likely different from what a lot of the like neighbors we're going to be ministering to would think of, just because culturally, and yeah, like monetarily and all those things. So I was just curious about how y'all went about learning how to feast, like, with your neighbors in a way that's accessible and, like, inclusive. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, that's a great question. I think, you know, I'm not sure if this is more hindsight, you know, sort of projecting back, or if we actually went about it in this order. But I think if we were doing it now, I would say I'd begin the conversation about feasting when beyond just the individual community groups or individual families. If we were talking about corporately trying to include the neighborhood and extend hospitality, I'm not sure we actually did it this way, but I think if I were starting now, I think what I'd start with finding out what are the things that are already going on in the neighborhood and figure out, is there a role for us to play in that? So one thing that we did do is when we were meeting at the school, there was a street fest that happened in the neighborhood. It was a low-income neighborhood. And rather than try to do some summer festival on our own, we just decided we wanted to help however we could with the street fest. And so we, you know, for years we manned the inflatables section, and we ran parts of the games, and we provided music for different parts. So that was a way of joining in the feasting that the community was already doing. We just wanted to have a seat at the table and participate in that. Same thing happened for us with the Flying Pig Marathon, as you know, and the big pig out that we do. It was looking at something that was already happening in the neighborhood and saying, how can we bring our joy to what the neighborhood is already celebrating, and start there and then build off it. And then since then, we've created a few other things that have, I think, become staples of the neighborhood now that we initiated. So we do an Advent hymn sing with a Christmas party attached to it that neighbors generally come to. We do a summer, again, these are things that developed over time. It's not something you can snap your fingers and do, but where instead of a summer picnic, there's this little private amusement park that's not too far from our town. And so we rent out the amusement park for the whole day. And so that's like the easiest sell to neighbors in the world, is that, like, for free you can get to come and your kids can ride rides with no lines. You know, it feels like a little carnival more than like a big, you know, amusement park, but it's so fun. But we also get to invite our ministry partners for, there's a women's shelter that we are connected to. And so all the folks from Lydia's House, the name of this women's shelter, they come and their kids come, and folks who are going through some of the parenting classes at the CityLink Center downtown, they'll come along too. So there's a lot of ways of bringing other people into what was originally started as just a church picnic, of thinking about how to build bridges. And yeah. So, but those are things that developed over time. I think the first thing we started with is, like, is there anything that's already happening here? And then how do we get to be a part of it in some way? How can we be good participants rather than take over or something?
Do you have a lot of members who live geographically close to your church? And if the answer is no, may I ask a follow-up question?
Okay, the answer is yes, but you can still ask the follow-up afterward. So yeah, we drew a little 3-mile radius around one neighborhood town square when we started in 2009, and still to this day, probably 80% of our people live within that, what we call our little parish. But when we moved specifically into Norwood, which is, again, it's a small little geographic footprint, it's one of the 5 neighborhoods we planted out, we probably only had 3 people who owned homes in Norwood. But just by virtue of moving into the building, newer folks from the neighborhood coming, other folks who maybe they were in school and were looking for a starter, people choosing where to live, now we have 45 homes in Norwood that are right around there. Some girl actually came up with a 5K that she can run and run by about 40 people's houses, and which is kind of fun. So she does her little New City 5K. There is quite a lot of people in a small space. We do have folks who come from outside of that, and we try to not make it an insiders-outsiders kind of thing, but we do sort of make no apology for that in terms of our mission emphasis. It's going to be in that footprint. That's kind of our parish in that way.
So I'm just curious, can you imagine any disconnect or difficulty that would come from that not being the case And how would we, you know, alleviate that, you know, if we're neighboring with our neighbors that we live next to, but those aren't the same people, does that create any obstacle to really genuinely feeling like our church is personally in the neighborhood of our building?
Yeah, that's a great question. I mean, some of it may be, you know, actual time constraint, right? If you're like, how much energy do I have, right? I want to work with my actual neighbors in my neighborhood where I live, and then our church has also got a neighborhood. And so then I'm, you know, thinking about that. How much time realistically can I give? And I think those are probably practical concerns that, you know, individuals will need to figure out how does that shake out, you know, in one way, shape, or form. But just acknowledging that that's the case, and that living, you know, working with your actual neighbors is still counts as church work, even if it's not next to, you know, the church building or in the church building. I think one way maybe to alleviate a little bit of that, though, is thinking through, you know, even if I live a little further away, when I am coming near to the church building, are there ways to linger longer around there? Whether it's, you know, we're going out to lunch after church, can we go to a place that's, you know, rather than drive back to our part of town, can we spend a little extra time around? Are there parks and things around? If I'm bringing my kids over to a midweek program for something, is there a way to hang out there a little bit longer, just to get to know the neighborhood a little bit more as representatives of the church in that way, and seeing yourself almost like kind of like a little chaplain to the neighborhood, you know, as a way of representing the church. I think there's a way to authentically do that, you know, in terms of not being disingenuous, but saying, this is my church and this is my church's neighborhood. And so therefore, even though I don't live exactly proximate to here, there's a way of trying to own the fact that something really important to me happens here. And therefore I want to know the place that's around it. I might not have the same energy and time to give to it that somebody who also lives here does, but I want to give something. Maybe it's a tithe of your time of neighboring. You know, you're still mostly on mission in your actual neighborhood, but you're also wanting to utilize and see as a secondary neighborhood, you know, the church's neighborhood. I don't know if that's helpful.
I think Sherry, did you have a question?
She's been trying. She had her hand up like four times.
I'm just thinking about some of the demographics around us. There will be some apartments behind us that like might have a lot of children, maybe more lower end apartments, and then these brand new apartments and a lot of students and people new to town, medical students. I don't know if you have demographics that you're specifically reaching out to, but I'm just thinking things that we might be doing for the children in the neighborhood or the young adults that are new to town in the neighborhood.
So we do have some really different demographics in our neighborhood. Our neighborhood is really composed of three different groups of folks. I mean, on the one hand, there's what you might call Old Norwood, which is folks who've lived in a lot of folks in Cincinnati, when it was more of a manufacturing center, moved to Cincinnati from Appalachian areas. And so from Kentucky, from West Virginia, moved to Cincinnati to work in steel mills, worked in our neighborhood in particular, was a General Motors plant, which closed in the late 70s, early 80s, so sent our neighborhood into a massive depression. But there are folks who lived here who came to be a part of that. So working class, in some cases lower middle income, and that is a demographic, Old Norwood. Then there's Xavier University, which is right next door. So there's faculty and students who live there. And then there's now, we're actually, even though we're our own municipality in the middle of Cincinnati, right behind our police station is the actual geographic center of Cincinnati. So you can be in our neighborhood, you can get to anywhere in the city in 20 minutes, which makes it a desirable place to live for young professionals. So we have the gentrifying young professionals. What we've learned is that because we started with just lots of young professionals, largely educated young professionals, if we just asked only questions that sounded good to us, that's who we were going to serve by default. And those were the people we were going to attract by default. And if we wanted to branch out more, both to students and to folks who had been in Norwood longer, we had to try to learn to listen a lot. So back to those listening questions. You didn't talk about it, but in the back of your booklet is pages 12 and 13. You know, when Paul goes to Athens in Acts 17, before he gives his big evangelistic speech, what he says at the beginning is that he'd been walking around and looking and seeing, you know, he'd seen the idols of the city and so on. He does a, you know, in short, he does a, you know, a missiological study of the place that he's talking to. And these are ways of asking questions about the neighborhood. I'm sure you're asking these about Fort Worth in general, but when you're talking about the, what's it called, Near South Side, you can probably ask these questions specifically of the area right around the church. And for us, I think we're still growing in this, but one of the ways that we, you asked a question, I probably didn't answer it as comprehensively as I could have. Truth is, we did have developed relationships with churches that were pre-existing too. Most of them were in other parts of Norwood, but still in our neighborhood. But we asked a lot of these questions of them. So we try to be learners when we came. And so one of the big resources for us were other churches. Like what, for churches who had been there for a while, what do you know about the neighborhood? In what ways could we contribute? We don't want to be competitive. We want to be complimentary. You try to take that off the table. We don't want to compete. We want to be complimentary. What are the needs? Where's the white space? The things that are not being done that should be done in the neighborhood. We learned a lot of things there. And that question number one was a big one for us. What are the pain points? What are the challenges and difficulties that exist in your community? Those were helpful questions for us to ask. And I think we're still asking and trying to learn more about. But asking other churches was a big deal. Learning about different, you know, these different population centers and the needs were very different. So for you guys, I mean, you know, thinking about the folks that are, you know, living nearby, proximate, and apartment buildings that have lots of kids and so on. You know, just again, looking at your building is going to be an asset to the community. And so is there a way to leverage that? One of our deacons' questions, we you know, the Book of Church Order in the PCA is actually, it's pretty well defined about what elders do. It's a little more open about what deacons do. But we use three words. These are not magic things. Feel free to ignore this. But we use three words to talk about the role of deacons in our church. One is leveraging. So how do we leverage our church's assets for ministry? So the deacons, part of their job is to not to be the only ones who do this, but to be sort of creative leaders for us, thinking, you know, how do we leverage this, what we have, whatever God's given us, our people, our talent, our time, but also our building. How do we leverage this for ministry? The next one is eliminate. How do we eliminate needs within our congregation? There are people who are lost a job or missing payments or difficult domestic issue, whatever it may be. How do we eliminate needs? And then we can't eliminate needs in the neighborhood, but we can't alleviate needs in the neighborhood more broadly. So then part of it is diaconally thinking about, all right, so there's the apartment with lots of kids. Is something down the line, is an after-school program something that could be helpful? You know, is that a service to the neighborhood that could be, you know, a way of, I'm just making things up here, but those are part of the questions I'd be asking. And it's not all going to happen at once. Like I was saying to somebody before today is, you know, you already have things you know you're going to do in the building, but I 100% believe that 10 years from now, you're going to look back on how the building is being used and realize you had no idea that the thing that seems like the most significant ministry that you have wasn't even in your thought process. Because, I mean, really following God's leading is really, and leaders are doing this, you're leaders at the church, you're really just kind of connecting the dot, you know, the dots 1 year to the next, right? Like how is God leading? It's not all some grand plan. It's going to be sensitivity to the Spirit, learning the neighborhood, also asking who has God brought us and what are the passions of our people? You know, there's going to be somebody who has a passion for whatever, English as a second language. And you never thought you were going to do English as a second language classes, but somebody's got a passion for it, and Monday nights are open, and you've got that cool gathering hall down there, and you can eat a meal and teach people English. You know, I mean, just making things up, but it's fun to dream about, right?
Okay. Thank you so much.
Thanks for having me. I want to come back when you guys are in the building.
For sure.
Yeah.
Yes. Okay. Thank you all so much for giving your Friday night and Saturday morning into afternoon as well. Josh will be around for 10 more minutes here if you have a, if you want to grab him here for a quick question that maybe you didn't want to ask over here. Thank you all. There's still, if you want to grab some more kolaches and things on the way out, maybe you haven't had your fill of Chick-fil-A yet. You can still do that if you'd like. There are Ziploc bags too. You could get a to-go bag if you'd like. Thank you all. We'll see you tomorrow.